Keeping you up to date with all the latest SEO and web development news. With a little flavour added in.
Well, now let's have a little bit.
Detroit style. The Trademark Productions weekly podcast radio show. Coming live from Detroit.
Well, actually, Royal Oak. No one really lives in Detroit anymore.
straight onto the internet.
Straight onto the internet, live with the Trademark Productions podcast.
Nope, it'll be on later today.
All pre-recorded. So we gotta you know, push for FCC so that if you throw a bunch of F bombs, we gotta, you know, beep those out. No, we're cool. So, Trademark Productions podcast radio show. It's been a week.
We
had a little vacate.
We did,
but we've got a great social media pro on the line. This guy is historic.
Yes.
He needs some big introduction. Mike, you want to go on with some awesome introduction?
Brent Katoris is on the line with us. He is the co-founder of Blue Glass. He's huge in the social.
Ooh, you better correct that there.
I'm sorry?
Brent?
Co-founder or founder? I'm sorry.
I was a co-founder, but I'm not involved with Blue Glass anymore. So.
Yeah, that's what I meant. He was a co-founder of Blue Glass, one of the biggest social marketers on the web right now, complete Reddit pro. And we just wanted to talk about the best social media practices out there right now for getting your content read.
Excellent. Brent, thanks for taking your time out of a busy day and spending some time with us on the line here to give away a bunch of free tips.
Yes.
Awesome. Pleasure.
One of the things I was curious about is how you initially got into the the digital marketing world. Like, what drew you in to this universe?
So I have a weird background. It can be kind of a long story, so I'll try to make it really short. Essentially, I didn't really get drawn into it. I opened up a newspaper. I'd always played with computers. My mother got me a Commodore 64 when I was like 7, and I learned how to BBS hop. And when AOL came out, I learned how to fish and do kind of, you know, stuff with shell accounts and stuff like that until I got in trouble. So I'd always kind of been involved with computers on and off in my life, and I built some web pages. I had, you know, done some stuff in my past, and I needed a job. And I basically opened up a newspaper, and this company was hiring for somebody doing web editing. And through some of the practice I had been working with, I had, you know, been getting links for a small business I was trying to make at the time and didn't know anything about SEO, but ended up ranking number one on MSN. And
oh, wow.
How much I didn't know. Yeah, right.
What year was that, Brent?
That was 2006, 2007, something like that.
And you were ranking. You were ranking number one on MSN.
No, but it was for like a specific phrase in that industry. Like, I was doing certification because I come back from China, so I was doing like business certification for people that wanted to get products certified to sell in the U.S. for safety. So I was just getting links for like AQSIQ and UL, and it wasn't about link building. It was like I was putting it in places I wanted to get clients from, right?
Gotcha.
And so in the process, I ended up ranking number one for AQSIQ on MSN, and it was driving a lot of leads, and I was getting a lot of business. So when I went in for this interview for doing web editing, I basically had no idea what I was doing. I Googled it for like 48 hours, you know, ahead of time, went in, spoke the right language, and I had mentioned like SEO and ranking and just what I had learned in that short time period, but ended up through a series of interviews getting hired as an SEO for this healthcare company managing 100 sites. No idea what I was doing. I ended up downloading and listening to SEO rock stars from Webmaster Radio. My 45-minute drive back and forth to work, I would take notes. I remember I have a notepad somewhere that still has 301 question mark, you know, things like that. And I just literally hustled. And then a month later, I talked to my boss into sending me to PubCon, met, you know, the SEO rock stars Greg and Todd, started meeting people, you know, really focused on relationships instead of getting something from people. And over, you know, the next couple months, really kind of jumped into the scene. How I got into social was really just link building exercise, right? Very, very early on, nobody was really doing, you know, social at all. They didn't call it social media. It was link bait. And, there was a site Dig, and I found it, and I started submitting, you know, my site's content to it because you could basically get deep-seated links and you could get links on the profiles. They didn't know follow them. It was, you know, you could jump your rankings up and make doorway pages. So it was a great way of, you know, succeeding early on.
So you were an early Dig gaming whore.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing was, is I broke all the rules. I had a test site that I built called Weird Asian News. I made an account called Weird Asian News. I still have the account. Nobody has their dating account anymore, but I still had it, you know. And I only submitted my own content. I broke every rule, but because the content was interesting enough, one hit the front page and crushed my server. I mean, so bad I was on DreamHost at the time. DreamHost actually got really pissed off and said, told me that I should have known better than to get that kind of traffic, and they actually revoked my account and kicked me off the server. And so I had to find another server, which is a whole other story.
Those are fun stories.
But anyway, when my site came back up, that was the days when you really didn't have inbound link tracking, right? So I went to Technorati Media, and I used to refresh so you could see what people in the blogosphere were linking to you. And it used to be like 2 or 3 links a day. And every time I refreshed, it was all these new links, right? It was cached up on Dig. They were still able to get the source link. There was mirrors, so they were still able to link back to the right spot. I was getting all these links. Long story short, 1 month after I launched the site, after one front page hit, I had over 10,000 links, a PR6, and was ranking for pretty much anything I wanted. And I was like, holy crap, that was like a 30-minute exercise. I got more links than I could get in a year.
What was the topic about, Brent?
I can't even remember what the story was. It was just some weird Asian story, whatever story. I can't even remember what the story was. But, what I figured out really quickly was it wasn't about hitting the front page. That was just a step in the process. What I realized was there was a lot of people looking for content, looking for, validated content so they could write about it. And if I could get something popular on the front page of Dig, then I could get in front of influencers, big influencers, and I could get them to basically promote my content for me. And that was very, very important for me. So I scrapped the account, got a new account, started really focusing on how and why it worked. Brett Tapke did a post about speaking at conferences, and one paragraph at the bottom was about speaking drunk. A good friend of mine, Todd Malico, said, hey, it would be really good if you could get his post to the front page, get you recognized, whatever. So, but the idea was SEO content, front page of Dig. It never happened. So we got it to the front page in 3 hours and killed it. And, after that, I got invited by Danny to come out to the first social SMX and speak on, Dig and viral marketing and as it was starting to kind of form. So I was really lucky at a right time, right place, early in the industry.
Sure.
Back when people said, I don't like this social stuff. It's just a trend. It will never last. And that traffic's all crap. I want to block it from my website. It's hurting my AdSense, CPMs, all those fun days, right? So that's how I got into it. And then when everybody else kind of got into it and got back out of it because it got hard, they started having algorithms and stuff. They started, back then it was 10, 15 votes to get to the front page of Dig. I mean, how hard is that, right?
Yeah.
But now, then it got to where it was like 60 or 70, and it was algorithmic, and Reddit started getting tougher, and all of these sites started, getting a little more real. And everybody else just said, it's not worth it, and quit. And so a lot of people jumped out, and I kind of stuck around. So I really thought, I really see kind of where this is going, and I wanted to stick around. So I stuck 100% behind it. Through the goods and the bads, and I'm still doing it today, in my opinion, a lot better than then, but yeah, still doing it today and still having more success today than we ever had back then even.
So now you have your own company. Tell us a little bit about that, the name of it, and kind of like what you guys specialize in, and then kind of what's your vetting process on bringing on new clients.
Sure. So, we have Kyrae Media. Like I said earlier, I co-founded Blue Glass with Chris and Dave and a handful of other people, and in the process of that, it took my company, which was Brent Satoris Inc., took it out of the, you have to transfer over the companies and so forth. So at the time, I had Weird Asian News and a handful of other sites. My son's middle name is Kyrae, so I just said Kyrae Media. Boom, there you go. I just kind of formed an LLC. When I got decided, last year, January, to just kind of separate, go back to doing what I was doing, I just kept the name, and basically what it is a content marketing company. We essentially do campaigns, social promotion campaigns. We consult with clients, etc. to make sure they have the right website set up and the right, you know, look and feel so that they can, you know, welcome people to share them easier. We talk to them about, you know, what kind of content they should do, what's going to succeed, what won't, specifically around what their actual marketing goals are, because we don't believe in just doing, you know, viral content that has no purpose or no value to a company, right? It needs to be related to the product and have some sense of value. And then, you know, really about focusing on them not looking at it as a Band-Aid solution. In response to the question of, like, how do we vet? We really vet based on people looking at this as a Band-Aid solution. Like, if somebody's like, I want to gain 500 links, well, that's, you know, not really the complete picture of what you should do with social. Or somebody who just wants to throw, like, I just want to throw something on a template on the side of my site and promote it. I don't really want to build a content area or engage my audience. I just want the benefit. All of those kind of shortfalls, those short-sightedness, are things that we're very wary of. So we look for, I like to say it to people, we look for people who don't, we don't have to sell them the buy-in. Like, they understand what the value is and they're willing to participate in a meaningful way. And we really try to guide people and then help them to get what the success they need when they're really willing to engage in a way that's positive, not only for the promotion, but for their company as a whole. Like, we're really focused on making sure that people walk away with the benefit long term with social media. And that's really where it's going. So you can't afford to just throw an article up. You have to engage it, really understand it, and really embrace it at this point.
How do you get clients who might be a little bit wary about the return on social media on board? Like, maybe they're a little bit on the fence, because I know some people don't always see the benefit of social media because it's not an immediate return a lot of the times.
Yeah, and they're pretty skeptical of it, because it's almost like we're having another wave of the whole I need a website type of a target for just get me something out there, and just, you know, let me spend a couple grand and just get something out there. And now it's, well, let's just do some Facebook, get a fan page going and a Twitter account. And I just want to, you know, how do I get people noticing that stuff? I mean, there's got to be a lot more to the game plan into getting, I guess, running a customer through a life cycle to get them to their ultimate goal.
Yeah, it's very important to ask people what their goal is. A lot of, like you said, a lot of people, you know, basically are like, I need a Facebook page. Well, why do you need a Facebook page? Because everybody else has one. I need a Twitter account. Why do you need a Twitter account? Like, you know, people don't necessarily always know why they want something. And that's a big question for me, because, as I mentioned, we're really looking for people who, you know, already kind of know that. But that's an answer that's very specific to me, and I'm in a very different place just because of my experience and the time that I've been in this industry and kind of who my clientele is and stuff like that. But, you know, to answer it more from anybody's perspective, right? Like, it's important to understand, you know, what it is that you're trying to accomplish and what you think social is going to do for you. Because if your goal is to get more links, that can actually happen. So you just have to, you know, put your strategy together in a way that really targets efforts that will do that. If your goal is to build a new community, someplace you can get feedback from, that's great. That can really happen. And there's really good sites for doing that, like Facebook, more so than Twitter, right? Because it gives you a more of a conversation point. So, like, Facebook and Google Plus is really great for that. If you're looking for people to be more, you know, branding, then, you know, Pinterest does really good for that. Twitter does really good for that. So it really just depends on what your goal is. And really looking at it for how it satisfies your goal. You know, I think it, just like building a website, you know, in that same analogy, you know, social, if you build profiles, it's just like putting up a website. But if nobody sees it, then what's the point? And the same thing goes in the social. And that's where we get into, you know, a lot of our business comes into play, is that a lot of people understand they can, you know, I can do an audit, we can talk to them, we can give them all the consulting. They'll say, yes, I totally agree, I understand, I don't have the people to do this, it's not going to happen, now what, right? And it does take a little bit of time, and it does take a little bit of energy, but if you don't look at every social site as a mandatory, if you look at what your goals are, and you look at what those social sites can actually give you based on the effort that you can put in, you can put together a strategy that you can do with the amount of time you need to. We did a test to run a Facebook fan page that had been dead literally from the beginning. It had been completely automated, and it was the Weird Age News one. It was, you know, it was one that was near and dear to my heart, but we'd never done anything with it. I just basically set up a feed to automatically update whenever we did a post. That was it. And so just for the sake of fun, you know, a while back, we were like, well, you know, we've been working on clients, but we were like, well, let's take a page and really do something with it, but with the most minimal amount of work that we can do. Like, what do we have to do to bring it to life? So what we did is we just did 1 to 2 updates a day, just basically 1 to 2 updates geared towards getting engagement, not towards getting anything other than engagement. And I mean, we were literally able to take that page from the non-engagement. You know, it had gone from having a reach of like 5 to 10,000 people to a reach of having like 350 to 400,000 people on a daily basis. I mean, it was a night and day growth. The page came right back to life. It started growing and growing the fan base really, really fast. So the point is that, like, if you identify what your goal is, you identify the sites that are most likely to provide that, and understand what effort's going to take, like, how are you actually going to make that work, and put together a real plan, you can do it with a matter of an hour a day and have really good success with it.
Now,
the problem is,
regarding Weird Asia News, like, I understand it, but this is a good example for some of our listeners too now. So, okay, now you've brought the traffic back up there, but I mean, what's the end goal? What are you trying to get out of that account?
So, for me, it's a mixed bag with what the end goal for social is, because it starts to get into a theoretical look on where the transfer of how we use technology in the web, right? So you can get me going on a huge tangent of, I don't believe that we'll have websites. I think the websites are very, you know, short-term, but I think that, you know, a lot of the people are starting to understand how platforms and clouds and mobile devices kind of eliminate that. So it's more about data than it is about, you know, having a website or having a real presence in that regard, in my opinion, long-term. So for me, it's about building communities, right? Marketing is about being able to get in front of an audience of potential buyers and show them something that you want them to potentially buy. And if the audience, majority of the audience, is going to exist in certain places, like, you know, take a real world example. If the mall is the place that everybody gathers, then you want to open a shop within the mall, right? You ask somebody, well, why do you want to open a shop there? Well, you want to open a shop there because that's where the people are and that's where you're likely to sell something, right? So when I look at, you know, why do I want to have a buzzing environment? Why do I want to have a successful page? Well, because if I have a page on Facebook where people are actively engaged and following, and there's 100,000 followers on there, and I have a message that I want to get out, I get my message out in front of 100,000 people. If it's a, hey, go buy this really cool Asian product on, you know, Amazon, whether it be, hey, go buy something from this affiliate, whether it be some company who's doing, you know, travel and they want to do a contest and they want my audience to get in front of, regardless of what it is that I want to say, I have an audience of people who are there to listen, and I can, you know, in a regular manner, present them with any content I want to and you know, elicit some sort of reaction from them.
Gotcha.
And that's valuable to me. You know, I definitely can correlate it. I mean, like, when I get, you know, a page that has, you know, again, Weird Asian News is a weird one because it's fun content, right? There's ways to make all sites work. But, you know, when I get traffic and I go into the traffic numbers, my traffic from Facebook is better than my traffic from Google. I get, you know, 3 times more page views. I get 3 times more time on site. I get, you know, about, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10,000 visits a day from Facebook, you know, coming back to a site with a limited number of visibility on the site itself, only like having like 30,000 fans. So, you know, there is traction. There's a way to pull people back. I mean, the same thing can, you know, was said even worse about Pinterest. Like, on Pinterest, it's image-based, and people are seeing the images on the site. So what's the point? But the truth is that a lot of people click through, a lot of people purchase, a lot of people end up taking actions beyond that. And they're very accustomed to that environment. They're used to spending hours on Facebook. And when people get past the newness of a site, it becomes a normal. And they start looking for things to read and looking for things to go look at, looking for places to go. And so building an audience where there's a large, you know, building a site and a presence where there's a large audience of people that are spending their time and looking for things to do, it, to me as a marketer, seems like a no-brainer that's where I want to focus my energy.
So, what would you say are the top 3 mistakes a lot of companies that are getting into social media or they're considering doing it, what are the top 3 mistakes they make?
Well, number one is, you know, really understanding what they're trying to accomplish, right? So a lot of people, when they get into it, it's because it's popular. Everybody's doing it, so I have to do it. Or somebody else just did a huge ad campaign and they did a study and it says they made all this money. Well, we're missing out on that money. We should be there. You know, same thing to kill big. You know, why are we doing this when Twitter's got all the traffic and Facebook's all the traffic? We should be more like them. And that, you know, so this kind of like the grass is green. greener. I just want to be there because I want to be there without really thinking about what it is that they're trying to accomplish. And that leads into the second mistake that people make. And the reason that's a mistake, you know, just to kind of clarify, is because people don't approach it right. You know, they basically look to do what the bare minimum is for them to accomplish that, because they're set up in this mentality of, like, social is extra. Social is not a part of my day-to-day. I have my direct ads. I have my marketing. I have my sales team. I have my website. I have my business. This is what is my core, okay? Everything else has to come into that exploration percentage, right? So if I'm going to do social, that's fine. I'm going to grab one person off to the side and say, hey, go spend 25% of your time and go out there and accomplish this task, and we'll see if it works, right? And so then it doesn't have the same effect because the person doesn't spend the time, the resources, and the effort of combining it into a sales cycle and making sure that when they come back, there is a conversion mechanism and there's a way of making that translate into revenue and making it translate to success. It's just kind of like, go do this on the side. And then you come back a month later with somebody who really didn't have the time, didn't have the understanding, didn't have the support, and then look at it and say, well, how did this do, right? So the first mistake is that, really just not taking it serious enough and not really looking at that. The second one is trying to do too much too fast. Like, we're going to go tomorrow and we're going to make a Facebook page, we're going to make a Pinterest page, a Twitter account, a Google Plus account, we're going to go get on Reddit, we're going to get on Delicious, we're going to get on, you know, this site, that site, we want to be on Tumblr, and really trying to be on everything at once. I think it's much better to build up your profile really quickly so that you secure your space, but I think you should look and focus on one site until it accomplishes what you want that site to accomplish. You know, you look at Facebook and you say, we're going to start with Facebook. What's my goals to get from Facebook? What do I want to see happening? And how does that benefit me? And how do I correlate that to what we do as a business? What do I want to accomplish? Accomplish it. And once you've accomplished it, then move on to the next social site. But trying to take on too much at once. And then the third thing is understanding that when you're community building, it's a lot. This, you know, I love this example because this is what I did. You know, people go to conferences, they run into Danny Sullivan, they run into Matt Cutts, and they say, Matt, I've got this problem with my website. Can I fix this website? What can I do? What can I do that? The first time I ever met Matt, I said, hey, what does Matt Cutts drink? And somebody told me he only drinks Sprite because he doesn't drink alcohol. He was talking to 30 people. He was there for a long time. I went over to the drink stand, got him a Sprite, and brought him a Sprite. And so the first thing I ever had to say to Matt Cutts was, here's a Sprite, I'm sure you're probably thirsty. And me and him are very friendly now. We can have a lot of candid conversations. I've been to the Google site. I've had a lot of, like, you know, conversations that don't get repeated anywhere else, right? That comes from a level of engaging people that's less direct than trying to get what you want. You get more from having an audience or people that want to be around you that you can kind of solicit to or talk to on a daily basis than you do from the one-time opportunity at a sale. And so I think that that's the last mistake, is that people really focus so much on how they're going to make the money on the actual article or how they're going to validate that this was worth it, that they forget all the lessons we've learned in the last 100 years of social marketing in the real world, that pulling people together, having audiences, having people come to your establishment for various different reasons relates and it turns into long-term sales and branding. The highest dollar in advertising spending is not on a sale. It's on branding. It's always about trying to get people to feel comfortable with the brand and with the product so that that's their decision for the rest of their lives. And I think that when we look at social, we forget all that and we go back to that, I want to see a sale on this or it's not worth it. And so I think that understanding the big picture of what social really, really, really is, it's the focus of we are so, overwhelmed with technology that social is just our new interaction for how we live our lives.
So what's number three?
Well, that's number three.
Oh, that's number three. Yes. Okay, sorry.
So, what would you say
not really understanding what it is that you're trying to accomplish, taking on more than you can handle in a reasonable amount of time, and focusing too much on what the direct response is instead of really understanding the value of building a community are the three biggest mistakes I think people make. And it translates into them not doing good content, not managing their page well, not integrating it into their systems enough to have a real response, it makes their people skeptical of social. It makes the social that they're doing not have as much value, and it makes people look at them less for not making a real effort. And it's very transparent when people don't make a real effort. And I think that that is what really hurts companies when they come into social.
Definitely. What would you say personally your favorite social network is? Just like in...
that's really, really tough because I change it almost every day. One week I'm going to update Facebook a bunch and I'm going to participate with Facebook and I'm very happy about Facebook. And then I get unhappy about the fact that they force you to pay for visibility. Or they don't force you to pay. That's a mystery. You have to... You're forced to figure out the algorithm. It's just very much like Google. You're forced to be an SEO. You're forced to be a social media marketer on Facebook to have real visibility even amongst your friends and family. So that's very, saddening. And so I tend to end up on Google Plus because Google Plus is the second biggest network. It's growing very, very fast. People are getting more and more used to it.
Brent, let me interrupt you, but Google Plus is a huge network, but is it as active as it is large? I mean, I think that's a very misconstrued number as far as the activity that's happening on Google Plus, as opposed to, I mean, to have any type of Google product account, you automatically have a Plus account.
Sure. Yeah, so there's a couple different things there. The one is that if anything is active, for all of your followers, you only probably see 10% of their updates. So, if you take activity on Facebook that is, look at any Facebook page out there that's active. When there are big pages, people see about less than 10% of all the updates. So if you have, a million updates, but people are only seeing, 100,000, is it really that active, in comparison, So there's that to really consider is that if I look at my timeline on Facebook or I look at my time on Google Plus and I push refresh, I'm getting the same amount of new content on a regular basis. If I post something and I get comments on Facebook or likes, or I post something on Google Plus, I'm getting, plus ones and I'm getting comments. I'm not seeing a big disparagement there. I think that, there's a lot of activity on Google Plus, and even family members who have been all about Facebook and who are not techies at all, I'm starting to get IMs that say, we're starting a Google, a Google Talk. Please join in now, from my mom and my dad, So I think that it's the communities really helped a lot, and I think that the Google Hangouts have really helped a lot, and I think that, there's a lot of growth, and I think there's a lot of activity there. So I'm very, very, I really personally like Google Plus a lot better than I like Facebook. Reddit is a really fun one for me, but that's because Reddit is crazy, and it's weird, and it's quirky, and it's something that I've been around for so long that it just feels kind of like, it feels like the club to me, right? It feels like the place that, you could see anything happen at any given time. Yeah. Yeah,
Pretty much. So at the last SMX, you did a presentation, and it was more going into the depths of Reddit and making Reddit work. Can you kind of give us a Cliff Notes version of that?
Yeah, that's really tough to give a Cliff Notes. I think even the presentation, about 90% of people came up to me afterwards and had a lot of questions and were like, wow, that was really intimidating. The thing about Reddit is that, the biggest tip that I can give you about Reddit right now is don't try to game Reddit. It's really pointless to try to game and manipulate Reddit. It just never succeeds. And I spent probably a year, maybe longer, really me and Alexis, who was one of the founders of Reddit, we're pretty close. We talked on IM on the phone, we hung out, had lunches, we spent a lot of time together for a while, and I worked with the guys at Reddit, and so I got a sense of the mentality and how they fix things and how they work with things. They're very, very willing to cut a ton of innocent content just to get the one spammer. Where Google will be like, oh, we don't want to take all the spam out because we might get one good person. Reddit's the opposite. We will take out 80% of the content if it means we get 10% of the spammers. And they have no problem with doing that. They have so many silent bans and invisible filters and invisible bans. And their mentality is that if you notice it, then you're not the right person for the site. Because you shouldn't be on there if you are noticing these filters or these things are limiting you in any way. And that's just been their kind of, theory on it, right? And so any attempt to say, hey, I'm going to get like 30 people and I want you all to vote for me. Well, the thing is Reddit has an algorithm to detect similar vote patterns. And once it detects that 30 people are voting on the same thing multiple times, even if it's spread out with a bunch of, you know, individual votes on other stuff in between, they don't care about the diversity. They just care about the grouping. So once that grouping occurs, all 30 accounts get silent banned.
Boom.
You know, going, trying to do this or that. It doesn't end up working. So the whole notion of I'm going to try to find a way to game Reddit, it really doesn't work long term, and it really doesn't even work short term unless you're really, really smart in what you're doing. The thing is that you have to fundamentally understand that Reddit is not one community. Reddit, a couple years back, broke their site into what they call subreddits. And the front page of Reddit is an aggregate of all of the subreddits that you have purposely subscribe to. So you go in and you say, I'm interested in all these subcategories, and the front page is just a merged, you know, it's a filter of all of that. So each individual subreddit is individually owned, okay? So Reddit is like a software now, and it provides community software to individuals to make their own community. And they will not get involved in communities. So if, let's say, for instance, you go into a community and the guy that runs the community doesn't like you and just blocks you and bans you and kicks you out and doesn't let you do anything. There's nobody to go complain to because he owns that subreddit. It's his subreddit. And the Reddit admins, the actual, what they call them admins of the people in the company, they will not get involved in a moderation issue. So
can you buy and sell Reddit accounts then?
Or anything else, I mean, I don't see why you couldn't. Okay. I mean, I don't think that it'd be favored on. I think if you did it and got caught, your account would get banned. I'm sure there's something in the terms that, you know, their terms are so gray, they can pretty much do anything they want. So I'm sure that there would be something in there that they would consider, you know, a violation, they would ban it. But, you know, you could definitely do anything you want, but nobody knows, right? But, you know, so what you really have to understand about those subreddits is you need to learn each individual subreddit as if it was its own community. And that's very tiresome to people, right? It's like, well, I just want to be able to submit to Reddit and choose which category. Well, they're not categories, they're subcommunities. And each have their own rules, each have their own tone. Some like certain sites, they don't like others. One moderator might let you do something, the other moderator won't. There's so many different rules. And so when you want to find a community with Reddit to succeed, the first thing I suggest doing is actually finding the communities that best fit your product, that best fit your conversation point, and really spend your time learning what the patterns and what the conversation topics are, and really learning what that community cares about. Treat a subreddit as if it was the entire site of Reddit and learn it. And then when you go to participate in a way that is matching what everybody else is doing, how they are participating, and what they're accustomed to. I always tell people, look at what the admins are approving. Like, what are they voting on? What are they submitting themselves? And that will tell you what kind of content they're going to like. Message the moderators. Get a sense of, hey, moderators, hey, what's good, what's bad? Have communication lines. You can contact them and say, hey, it doesn't look like my submission went through. Is there something I did wrong? And they'll tell you. And you can learn and be a part of that community pretty easily. But again, it takes time. The second biggest thing is to understand activity levels in Reddit. It's one thing to go in and find a subreddit that has 100,000 subscribers, but if only 10 are online at a given time, then only 10 are potentially seeing it, let's say, you know, give a ratio of how many people throughout the day are coming on at that ratio level. You're not getting seen as much.
Hey, Brent.
You know, whereas you can have a group that has 30,000 people, but 3,000 are online at a given time. That's going to give you a lot more visibility. All these little things play into how you succeed on Reddit.
Okay. Yeah. Brent, is there some third-party tools that help to aggregate that type of information? It almost seems like it's a Quantcast or Compete that will gather up different types of specifics, okay, kind of like you just outlined, to provide that to you?
Yeah, there's a couple out there. There's one called the Reddit List. There's one that's called the Reddit List. You know, it's not really hard to find, but there's a handful of them. Because they have an open, you know, their site open source. So they have all their APIs and everything. So people have put together sites that will tell you the growth, so you can learn which subreddits are actually on their way up and growing into, you influential groups, and you can be a part of that growth and kind of get yourself in early. It shows which ones are falling. It shows the activity levels. It shows all of that type of information is available. You even have tools that will say, like, show us the best comments, show the best, titles, show all of these things, and you can start to learn a lot. So there are tools out there that you can find pretty easily, the Reddit list, and there's, a handful of other ones that work really well. There is a hand-curated one that, you can't really get access to, which we have access to. It's a Google Doc that's kind of readily updated that actually has a lot more individual information about various different ones and there's some tools built ourselves. So you can do your own things, and there's public tools, but you can absolutely utilize these tools to identify where to go. But at the end of the day, it's only going to tell you where you should be going to participate. At the end of the day, you have to go in there and learn what the rules are, become a part of the community, and all that. Now, at the end of this, when you get done, if you do that right, then, over a year or so, you'll get to that's the downside, right? Over a year or so, you'll get to a point where you've established yourself, you really understand it, and you can, go in and participate in these communities in a way that's meaningful and have success. And when we go in and we do a campaign and it hits the front page of some of these pages, we see 200,000 to 300,000 visits. We see a ton of social tractions on other sites. It's very valuable. In the end, when you have that influence and that benefit, right?
So at the end of the day, it's about participation, it's about longevity, and it's about being genuine.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's the way social is across the board. If you really want to succeed and have success, not today and tomorrow, but for the rest of, the next 10 years, if you want to have success, you got to take this for real, and you have to really look at this as the future and start getting into it in a way that's meaningful. For a minute, just say there's a time limit. You have a year left before the web is no longer what you knew it, before there is no more. I mean, we have monitors now that are the size of a piece of paper. They can do them as thin as that. That's the new technology, right? Just came out of CES, right? How long until TVs and advertisement and everything is based on who you are that sees it? Google goggles, right? Google glasses and, augmented reality. I mean, we're so close to a point where there is no more destination. It's just a fluid information path, right?
Mm-hmm.
And social plays such a role in that. It plays such a role in the influence. It plays such a role in your ability to get in front of people. And it's going to the longer you're in it, the more you learn, the more established you are, the more success you're going to have. So, definitely taking it serious and really looking at it for what it means for your company is super important.
Awesome. Do you have any final thoughts? As we've got to get closing in on this. Do you have any final thoughts about social media in general, or just how to get your content read or noticed?
Yeah,
I guess.
I think the biggest thing is for people to really take themselves out of their shoes for a second and try to look at something really from an outside perspective. So often people want to promote something, they look at it, and I say, well, why does anybody care? Yes, you care. It's your product. Yes, your client cares. But why does the average person care? And trying to find a balance in what you do with social between what's important to you as a company and your target audience, but also you have to think of another audience out there, and that's the influencer. The influencer is a huge audience, and you want the influencer to share your content, to vote on your content, and to participate. And you have to start, the biggest tip I can get is start thinking about the influencer and start thinking about ways in which your content can be viable to mass audiences and be interesting and be, shareable. And start focusing on that when you look at your campaigns.
Excellent, excellent. Awesome. So, Brett Asturis?
Katoris, I'm sorry.
Brett Katoris. Katoris. Go ahead and give out all your contact details and your website and stuff if people want to get a hold of you.
Our company is Kyra Media, kyramedia.com. And, really, if you want to get in touch with me, I really want to actually make it a little bit more of an effort because I want people to really want to get in touch with me. But, you can contact me through the website or you can, I have social channels up there. You can find me on Facebook and other
places. Yeah, you're not hard to get hold of. He's pretty open and accessible, but getting him to answer a phone or an email is what's challenging because he is selective. He is selective. Well, excellent. Brent, thanks for taking time out of your afternoon and speaking to us, and we'll hopefully see you over at SMX.
My pleasure, and I look forward to seeing you guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Take care.
As you can see, Brent knows how to talk.
Yes.
He definitely is a gift for gab. And as we can see with a lot of our podcasts, not many of our guests ever have a loss of words.
No, which is easy for us for the most part.
Yeah. No, but it's good. I think it's great information to let someone that is a pro, that is an expert, to kind of just run wild with the tongue, to kind of help to, I like to call it defecating of the brain, and all this great information of an experience that they have, because we're always looking for these little new types of nuances or strategies or edges, as shoe money would call them, to get an edge on the competition, and we're we can have success with a number of these different products and social networks and blah, 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 blah that are out there. So that was definitely pretty cool. Who do we got coming up next week?
Next week, I am not 100% positive yet, but I have a few things lined up.
Ooh, anybody good?
Shannon Paul, hopefully, who used to run the Red Wings social media, and she also used to do Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan social media. I can't remember what bank she works for in Ohio, but she's the one who I've been in most contact with. She's just got a busy schedule, so we'll see.
Ohio Bank.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's not
fit. Social high banking.
Yeah, but I mean, she's a social whiz. She's been she worked for a big social company out in Seattle for a little while.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
I know who she is.
Yeah, she's pretty cool. Before we go though, did you hear what happened to Burger King today?
Burger Fling? What happened to Burger Fling?
Burger King
big old fuck up.
Yes, on Twitter, someone hacked their Twitter account. Password was Whopper123.
Oh.
Changed the name to McDonald's.
Ooh.
Said they were bought by McDonald's and changed the cover photo to a McBites advertisement.
You wonder if something like that is legitimate.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, coming from McDonald's?
Well, no, I'm saying coming from within your own company. Like, what if we did cause a stir and we created this entire tactic? That's a ton of free public relations and advertising that exposure to the brand. In fact of the matter is Burger King, McDonald's is convenience food. It's fast food.
Exactly.
So you're really going to get pissed off, and they're really usually next to each other within a block.
Exactly. I was going to say, you're either going to turn right or you're going to turn left.
Yeah. So you know? Is that really going to matter that much? If anything, I think it's just very good advertising, or it's a very good use of a PR tactic that gets your stuff out there. Very, very cool. All right, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Trademark Productions' weekly podcast radio show. Remember to submit your questions online at tmprod.com and subscribe to our newsletter and on iTunes. No copying of this can be reproduced without permission. Terms apply. Copyright TM Productions 2011. All rights reserved.